Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Line of Vienna Sweet Podcast, episode 103. My name is Will Jones. Joining me tonight is Eddie Skelly. Hello, Eddie.
Hiya, Will. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Not too bad. Also on tonight are returning regular pundits Tom Jenkins and also James Jarvis. Hello, James.
Right, Will. Been in a couple. I've missed this.
I know. It's good to have you back. It's becoming quite a weekly occurrence, isn't it? I mean, we've had a few in a row. Obviously, we've not had Tom and James with us just recently, but you know, in the meantime, you know, we've been doing our best to keep up with recent results and whatnot to do with the takeover and plenty of other stuff. But you know, obviously, we had Norwich the previous week, and that's what we just touched on. Obviously, we got absolutely battered by them, despite the midweek win at Birmingham. But to be honest, quite frankly, the run of fixtures haven't been any kinder to us. We'll come to that in just a minute. But firstly, we'll go in chronological order. Obviously, the first sort of set of news that broke to us at the start of the week was to sort of sort our lack of scoring worries and striking options. Marvin Emnes was announced that he was coming on trial to the club. Boys, what did they make of that?
I mean, I didn't think he was good enough when he was at Swansea. I didn't think he was that good when he was at Middlesbrough. He was never really a regular goal scorer anyway, so I don't know how on earth he would be. And when was the last time he played? Does anyone genuinely know that?
It's been a while, hasn't it? Definitely. I mean, obviously his name hasn't done the rounds for a while, but you know.
Because as soon as it was announced, he just sounded like another Abassi. Like he was just going to be another Stephen Ireland who hadn't played for God knows how long and would take 3 bloody years to get fit again.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie, what the bottom line to that was?
Yeah, I think he confirmed in a press conference that he's been training, but he's just not up to match fitness whatsoever. I think he's not played in like a year and a half since leaving Blackburn. He played a smatter of games in Turkey and then he went to America and Canada with the Vancouver Whitecaps and didn't play there at all in 4 months. So he's not played any games at all, really, and it seems like a really kind of desperate attempt to, you know, to look for a striker to try and bolster the squad. But whether or not he's good enough remains to be seen. He's probably not, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. It remains to be seen, even if he does make, you know, fitness or whatever, whether or not he'll even get near the squad. Like I said, you know, even though we could do with another striker, you know, I guess beggars can't be choosers at this point. But it obviously remains to be seen as to whether or not that develops. So we will let you know as soon as we get news on that. But other than,
I swear Emnes wasn't really a striker either. He was a winger, so it would just be like playing Sami Amiobi at striker again. It would just be another person being played completely out of position, even if he was fit.
Yeah, I think he had one good season at Middlesbrough, if memory serves, because obviously they signed him the year that they went down. And then in the Championship, he got a run of games, played all right out wide, scored a few goals, got his move to Swansea eventually. But you know, when you're playing in a relegated Blackburn team and you're by no means the best player in that side, you're not a Championship player anymore. And I'm failed to be convinced that he was in the first place. So as you say, it's another Abassi, it's another move that would just, you know, add another person to the payroll, which, you know, we can't afford at the moment. We might be able to afford in the near future, but it's not a sign that any of us are going to get behind.
Yeah, just looking at his stats over the years in the Championship, he's only had one good season, really, where he actually played. He scored 14 goals in the 11-12 season for Middlesbrough. And then the rest of the time, he's not even played more than 25 games in, like, 15 seasons.
How did
at all.
He do at Blackburn? Because I remember him quite vividly there.
4 goals in 37 games in all competitions.
Wow.
So he's basically Josh McGinnis, is what we're saying.
But he can't even head a ball, yeah.
I mean, when you look at the stats, it doesn't McGinnis have within 60 games, Donaldson and McGinnis between them or something like that, within 60 games, have scored like one each or something like that.
His last league goal was the QPR game, which was before I even started my first term at uni this year.
Yeah.
That's how long
it was. Yeah, September. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it seems like a long time ago, that, doesn't it? But another thing which seems a long time ago now was Thursday's 11-year anniversary since we played Atletico Madrid away. Obviously, we covered that briefly last week, which was the anniversary of the home tie, in which we got that 1-0 win courtesy of El Hadj Diouf. And obviously, on the away tie, as every Wanderers fan I'm sure will remember, it was the 0-0 tie which despite its its boring nature, you know, it was definitely a huge result for us, sent us through to the next round. Do any of you lads have particular vivid memories of that night? Or
I think from my side, it's just that it was just amazing, given, you know, the first season I remember being a proper Bolton Wanderer and being properly aware was like 2004-05, which was the year that we finished sixth and then got into Europe. And that following year, we were robbed at Marseille. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm sure that you boys remember that, the handball and all of the, all that nonsense.
Oh, God.
I think the overriding emotion from my side was just a feeling of sort of vindication. You feel, thank God, we've actually managed to, you know, make a dent. And the fact that it was against that opposition, when you look at the team they had, you know, the Agüeros obviously sent off in the first leg for spitting on Juve. They had Torres in that side as well. just what an incredible result. Especially when you look at the team that I think we were playing. I mean, I don't remember the team per se against Atletico Madrid. I just remember the Bayern Munich side, which contained such footballing giants as Danny Guthrie, Daniel Bratton, Gerald Sid and Mikel Alonso. to go toe-to-toe with that kind of team, with the team that we had, just incredible.
Yeah, no, I managed to get the teams up last week of the one when we were at home. That was quite a sight to behold. I've just fished out the one that played away as well. The lineup was as follows. It was Jeskalainen, Nicky Hunt, O'Brien, Cahill, J. Lloyd Samuel, Stelios, Gavin McCann, Kevin Nolan, Joey O'Brien, Matthew Taylor and Kevin Davis.
See, that's not a bad one, to be fair.
No, I mean,
compared to the bottom unit, that's not a bad one.
Yeah, it's both O'Briens in there against the likes of Louis Garcia and Maxi Rodriguez, Jose Reyes, Diego Forlan. Just,
it's a hell of a side.
Abiati in goal, not to forget. But it's,
Kale had Forlan on toast. He was all over him.
Yeah, as you can imagine, both Nolan and Davis were both booked that night. But that's just standard procedure, I guess. But so we've even competed in the same, you know, not literally, but, you know, the same sort of league as those was just quite surreal when you look at the current state of affairs now, when you compare it to that. It's really rather depressing, isn't it?
It's surreal, but also that you think that Gary Megson has taken us further in Europe than anyone, than Sam Allardyce did.
That's incredible. Yes, let's gloss over that quickly. Yeah, but no, like I said, you know, comparing it to the current state of affairs, other than the news which broke this morning. And before we come to that, obviously, we had the really rather down-to-earth result against Leeds United, the 2-1 loss. Boys, were we expecting anything more, anything less? Presumably.
I thought we were going to get less. Murdered.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Bielsa announced his team, I think it was either Tuesday or Wednesday. Obviously, a very confident... typically,
he had every right to be confident. We were bloody diabolical against Norwich.
We were never going to beat them, even if, you know, we could match them on paper. It was just, you know, never even in doubt, was it? I mean, obviously, credit to Mark Beavers for getting the goal. Obviously, stabbed it in on the line. Just false hope once again.
That's what I keep saying to you, Will. And that's what happens with this team. They keep on dangling hope in front of you and taking it away. And to be honest with you, I expected absolutely nothing less from this game. You know, the second Beavers scored, I thought, get in. But we now have an entire game where I think we're going to do something, going to get something, and we get absolutely bugger all. And it's just so typical of this side. I don't know whether it's a lack of concentration. Oh, it was a lack of concentration from Remy Matthews, who'd been immaculate up until that point, both against Norwich and in that game. Mm-hmm. But it's those fine margins that send teams like Leeds up and teams like us down.
I mean, would it be sensible or a bit over extreme to be, you know, to slate Matthews for that error? Or, you know, I mean, obviously he'd been particularly good, you know, these last few games as he's been called into action. I think it was perhaps just more a lack of concentration than anything, wasn't it?
To be honest, he was probably due a mistake after all the heroics he's played in the previous games.
Yeah, I don't know, it was almost like it was just waiting for something to sort of a shell to hit us and then just be like, yep.
We can't have nice things, can we, William?
We can't.
But to be fair, I'll give the rest of the team credit where it's due. That from what I heard, I wasn't able to attend the game live because those prices were stupid. But
we can all back that.
yeah. But no, I'll give the team credit for. It sounded like they defended really resiliently from for the 45 minutes up until that goal between ours and theirs. So. No, full credit where it's due, but it's just a shame we just couldn't get back into it. Apparently, our heads dropped massively after that second goal winning.
Yeah, no, just, I mean, I wasn't there either, but it just, by the sounds of it, you know, it was just not really likely to be coming back from that. I mean, I know we probably ruined a chance that McGinnis missed in the opening 5 minutes. And obviously, you know, that came back to haunt us eventually. And yeah, it's something that obviously, had we got even a draw or a point out of them, rather, you know, it would have been a great result for us, considering, you know, that their sort of position in the league and how they've been doing recently.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Leeds United have a former Real Madrid keeper. Even if he was a second choice Real Madrid goalkeeper, he was still there for a couple of years, and they've got him in a Championship side. It's incredibly unfair to compare teams, but it is what it is. I'd have rated McGinnis even more if he could manage to accomplish that, but it's a guy who's not scored since September, so what do you expect?
Eddie, what did you make of it?
I think it's just the same as a lot of games this season. You know, effort was there and the determination, or sort, you know, perceived determination, but, you know, they've come away again with 0 points. It's now, I think, 2 wins in half a season, and it doesn't matter how hard you try or how many, like, how well you defend you're in a game, if you're coming away with no points, you know, and only 2 wins in half a season, you've got to take a look at yourselves, and, you know, it's probably looking like League One.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been the case for a while now, hasn't it? So, yeah, we'll just have to see what happens with that. I mean, obviously, we got the typical remarks on social media that we received from a certain Nick28T, who said, imagine being a Bolton fan and having to watch your team time waste from the 37th minute. 1-1 and the players are taking 8 minutes to throw the ball back into play. My God, feels like every team plays like this against Leeds. So frustrating. It's what we're best at, lads, isn't it, really?
Well, the thing is, why wouldn't you do that? Why on earth would you not do that when you're in our position playing a side like Leeds? I mean, only a moron would not understand why. I think Birmingham fans were giving us props for it, for God's sake, at the end of the game. We basically shithoused them out of it.
Yeah, but it's Leeds. If they're shit house, oh, it's wonderful tactics by Leeds, blah, 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 blah. Their own fans are delusional, mate.
Yeah, of course they are. And of course that wasn't the end of this in that game, was it? Of course it kicked off later on. I think they were to do with a water break incident, which involved Joe Williams and Pontus Janssen and... is it Click? I don't know how to pronounce it.
Matthias Click. Click is scoring goals, yeah. More like Click is squirting water.
Apparently Phil Parkinson, but from what I saw, the sending off, I think, was very harsh. I mean, I've seen the replays of it, also I wasn't there to watch it, but, you know, I mean, lads, I presume you've seen the clip back, but, you know, I think it's very unfair on Parkinson, wasn't it?
To be honest, it's hard to say, because the camera kept cutting away during most of the major incidents. It was cutting away when Joe Williams was... for lack of a better word, lifting Alioski off the ground, who was lying on the floor like a complete fanny. Mm-hmm. And then it all just escalated from there. It's really hard to tell in the scuffle, but from what I could see, it looked like Pontus Janssen did try to push away Parkey, separating players, but yeah. I can't really say for sure, to be honest.
It seemed like Parkey was almost just defending the players, and as soon as he sort of tried to intervene, you know, Janssen was having none of it and started to push him. And obviously, you know, it's natural for Parkey to react, you know, and I think obviously the Janssen thing sort of then Parkey didn't seem to take too kindly to, and obviously, you know, he'd given him a little bit of a push, you know, when the referee wasn't looking, thinking he got away with it, and then when Parkinson was being escorted away, obviously had a few words to say to him.
More than words, mate. Did you say?
Obviously there was the odd hand gesture, but, you know, to any professional lip reader, I'm not sure exactly what he said, but it was along the lines of just saying he bottled that.
But Pontus Janssen is a sort of player who could start a fight in an empty room. To be honest, he's a player I would absolutely adore at Bolton if he was doing that for us.
Yeah,
so.
He's one of those where, like, yeah, you know, you'd love him for your team, but, you know, you hate him if you're against him. So it's one of those, I guess. And obviously, he's a crucial player for Leeds, but, you know, for him to get involved like that and then, you know, end up, you know, taking absolutely no punishment for you know, something that was, all right, arguably something and nothing, but even so, to then cause a manager to get sent off because of something he hasn't done just seems a bit absurd, really.
At this point, do we think there'll be any retrospective action against, you know, the likes of Janssen, Clark, Williams, anything like that? Or
I mean, I doubt it. There might be like the odd little fine, but, you know, I doubt there'd be any. I mean, when a manager gets sent off in a game, that's usually it, isn't it, really? I don't know. I couldn't tell you officially what the bottom line of that is.
I don't think it really matters, does it, to us? I think like all Click's going to get fined, you know, something for squirting a water bottle. I mean, come off it. I don't think it really matters that much. You know, the thing is, we'll be sitting here saying it'd be hilarious if Joe Williams had done it back to him, as, you know, Joe Williams did to Ben Pearson back on his debut. It's one of those where, as you said about Jansen, you love him if he's for you, you hate him if he's against you. If it's an action by one of your players, you'd have found it hysterically funny. Possibly not funny, but you wouldn't have been complaining about it.
But you know, as you said, the Leeds fans are particularly delusional. You know, they're still arguing even to this minute about, you know, why it's Al Shishazri is just completely, you know, unnecessary.
the old saying that Joe Williams is living rent-free inside the Leeds United fans' heads.
Yeah, and of course there's that clip also of Parkinson shaking hands with Bielsa, and then Lee Butler having a little bit of a light-hearted reaction to that, and then Leeds fans have taken it upon themselves to then decide that it was mocking Bielsa, and I'm not really sure where that's come from either, but it's just, they'll bite at anything, won't they, those lot? But I mean, fair play to them, you know what I mean, they can do what they want, they won at the end of the day, and it's their bragging rights, but even so, I think they're overreacting ever so slightly. Yeah, I mean, unless there was any other points you wanted to particularly touch on from that game, obviously, it was Olkoski who gave away the penalty. I haven't seen the incident as such yet. Do we think that was harsh or
it was a poor challenge.
You're stupid, but Eddie will agree with me, I'm sure.
Yeah,
just a blatant pen, was it? And then Matthews presumably just got sent the wrong way. Yeah, so obviously that was our downfall for this time. But you know, I mean, Swansea away up next. You know, I can't imagine that'll be much easier. You know, particularly away from home, it's just not looking like things are going to get any better on the pitch, particularly, are they? But obviously, you know, since then... Sorry, go on, James.
Yeah, I was about to say, to be fair, if you want to look at it optimistically, Swansea, for lack of a better word, have not been the most consistent team in the Championship this season, so we don't know what we could get from them. If we sort of play like we did against Leeds or against Birmingham, then we could be in the shot. But I don't know. But that, again, that's thinking optimistically.
We don't turn up for big games like against Leeds. We don't turn up for the games against Swansea that could be infinitely winnable if we actually put a shift in.
What would your prediction be, Tom?
Well, for the Swansea game, mm-hmm. I reckon it's going to be another one of those where we concede early, then suddenly decide to turn up at maybe the 70th minute, and then they'll go score another one on the break, and we'll finish 2-0 to them.
Yeah, that's a good shout, Eddie.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a comprehensive win for Swansea, to be honest. Did you see that Daniel James goal from, I think it was last week?
That was brilliant.
He scared the hell out of me when we played him at home.
Just the thought of him going up against Wheaton and Beavers and Groundsar Taylor is horrifying. And yeah, I just don't see us getting anything out of that game at all.
It's already giving me nightmares. I'd rather
and
it...
And throw McBurney into the mix as well.
Oh, I know, yeah. Just not exactly looking forward to his chitalsery. I mean, I'm sure Joe Williams will take it upon himself to give a bit back. But, you know, obviously
could Joe Williams actually decide to play football for once? That'd be nice.
I mean, obviously...
Joe Williams is so frustrating because he's clearly a fighter and he clearly won't give up. He'll do a lot of yards, he'll do a lot of running. But my God, has he ever learned to pass a ball?
You know, when he first signed and everyone thought he was brilliant, you know, and I think it was just a bit of passion, you know, and a bit of fight to want to win the game. And, you know, at first I think that's, you know, all Wanderers asked for, Wanderers fans asked for, really. But in a way, you know, obviously since we're looking to play
football
on the ground,
he was actually... Yeah, sorry, but the thing is, the first couple of games, he was actually finding his passes. I'm starting to think whether those were actually just miskicks that found another target. Because, yeah. Oh my God.
First touch that goes about 20 metres and actually turns into a pretty decent pass.
Yeah, it just gives him an excuse to go into a 50-50 there, doesn't it? So, yeah, but I don't know. Obviously, we had the run-in with McBurney at Barnsley the year before last, and you know him, obviously, taking advantage of us not being able to cope with, you know, teams playing at us. Our own game in terms of you know, off the ball stuff, but hopefully if we can count on Joe Williams for nothing, for, you know, absolutely anything else, then it's going to be that, isn't it?
I was praying we would sign McBurney at the start of the season, but he did too well at Barnsley, and now Swansea are benefiting from it.
I think he was way above Barnsley's level at that point, wasn't he, really? You know, to still be hanging on to a place in Swansea team, alright, you know, I know they've been relegated, but even so.
Yeah,
in the Prem on occasion when he was playing for Swansea. I thought he was a very, very useful player. He's just like, I think, Nixon is absolutely in love with him, for example. And then the reason why is just because he's the kind of player, as we said, you love him if he's on your team, you love him, but he's not. He's like a B-Tech Diego Costa.
Exactly. I was just going to say the exact same thing, Tom, about, you know, him just being one of those love and hate sort of characters. So we'll have to see what happens with that, because I think that'll be the only matchup in that game. I can't exactly see the result being so, anything else other than one-sided, really. So we've all got that to look forward to ruining our weekends next weekend. But yeah, moving along from that, obviously things aren't looking much brighter on the pitch. But what we can happily reveal to you tonight, and I'm sure most of you will have seen this anyway, obviously the news that broke Sunday morning, this morning for us, was obviously Ken Anderson agreeing to sell his shares in the club. Boys, celebration time.
Let's go to town.
I mean, obviously, we don't want to put our eggs in one basket. Yeah, but obviously, we can't be so overly confident until our I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. But are we almost certain that this is it? This is the end of Ken's reign, do we think?
I think he has to go, doesn't he? I don't think he can afford to stick around any longer and, you know, not bankrupt himself completely.
No, I think... I think realistically he's got to the end of this week, you know, before things start turning a bit sour for him, haven't they? So, more so than they already have, but... Yeah, I'm hoping that we can rely on the EFL to not, you know, sort of screw things up for us, and providing that the funds are there. And I mean, I'm sure they are, and I know we've all heard the Facebook connections, and whether or not that's a red herring, like you brought up earlier, Tom, in the chat, you know, that's another thing. But it's just, I'm hoping that it's just completely legit, and for once, you know, we can actually be run properly, you know, we can actually organise a piss up in a brewery for once. Eddie, what are your thoughts on it all?
I mean, I was absolutely delighted this morning, you know, when I saw the news. Because it just seemed like another false dawn. You know, you heard all these talks of potential takeovers. We've had it for 2+ years. You know, Jorge Mendes being involved in the consortium and fans getting overexcited on that one. And then Saudis and Americans and Chinese. And, you know, when this finally, you know, the palming the Basveron finally, you know, news came about, it was absolutely fantastic to see that it's actually come to fruition. And it looks like it actually, you know, we could rebuild as a club and actually, you know... get some hope back into the club. And I know fans are getting overexcited with the fact that he's had business before, you know, like you mentioned previously with Eduardo Saverin, who was a co-founder of Facebook, and because he's worth $10 billion, you know, fans are getting pound signs in their eyes thinking we're going to become the next Wolves or, you know, the next Man City or something, but that's probably not going to happen.
I was going to say steady on there.
Yeah. If you read what Mark Howes has updated in his Bolton News article earlier, it seems the more talking about stability and getting a more community aspect back into the club. So I think that's first and foremost the most pressing matter, trying to just get a stable footing and not having to live month to month like we have with Ken for the past couple of years. And I think that's the most important thing at the minute.
Definitely.
To be fair, that's what they did with Man City for the first couple of years before they eventually became league dominators.
Jane, just calm down.
I'm sorry, I'm just really happy that Ken's going.
Tom, I know you're a little bit more reserved on the matter. Any particular reason for that, or are you just a little bit about the whole, you know, Bolton false hope?
I mean, it's partly that, of course it is, because, you know, I'm a Bolton Wanderers fan, and therefore I just expect the worst, as a lot of us do. But I think... Well, the reason why we've sort of got to keep our hair on is the fact, A, Ken Anderson, as we say, is under enormous pressure to sell so as not to bankrupt himself and to get out of this, you know, with a little bit of money left in the bank, as in a profit, based on his original investment, which probably was absolutely nothing. It was based on, you know, loans and pick notes, whatever, but we don't know that. But the important thing to note here is that he probably would have said yes to anyone at this point. Yeah. And if, you know, and it certainly is beneficial from his side to say that he sold the club for 27 million, because that gets people off his back when it's probably not quite that figure. And it also benefits Palmer de Basran's company as well to suddenly appear, you know, as a big player in investment, whereas at the moment they're quite a small company who've never invested more than £10 million into a business before. So this would be a huge step up for them. And it also, I think, obviously, we're led to believe that there's three principal investors. So there's Basra, Sharon Britton, and the final one's name I've forgotten. It's a mixture. It's a mixture of three different people, all with backgrounds that aren't, you know, multi millionaires, but clearly enough to buy a football club. I'm waiting for something to go wrong. Yeah. But assuming everything doesn't go wrong, I don't think we're going to be suddenly, you know, buying the league, as it were. No. But some stability would be nice, and some ability to be competitive would be just as nice.
Of course. Geoffrey Thomas was the one that you were showing to name there. He's obviously, you know, just as involved. And, you know, the combined total current assets value of $76 million and a total current net worth of $11 million. So, not too shabby. Yeah, although I know not many people have sort of heard of Sharon Britton's involvement in such sporting ventures, but you know, I think she's equally, you know, net worth $45 million, you know, so you know, more than triple that. But
that's the thing, these are clearly wealthy individuals who clearly are business savvy, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, from what we've heard of Parminder Bajrun, it sounds like he's got a very, very good reputation. You know, people have got a lot of good things to say about him, which, you know, a lot of the time, you know, if you're Dale Vince, for example, you're certainly not having that same conversation about Ken Anderson. But, you know, it's nice to think that there might be someone running our club with the best interest at heart. I think Eddie mentioned the community value. I don't think that can be underestimated, given the sort of the way that fans have fallen out of love with the club in recent years. You know, there's obviously a hell of a lot to be positive about, but there's also a lot to be wary about, because, you know, there was quite a lot of positivity when Anderson took over originally.
Of course, I mean, obviously Lee went about the same sort of way, you know, in terms of getting involved in the Bolton community, you know, getting on Twitter and, you know, sort of responding to sort of each and every, you know, Bolton fans' cries, you know, in a way that's great, you know, just to sort of settle in and whatever, but it's just, you know, being able to prove that, you know, you're going to be sensible with the money that you have and, you know, investing in it wisely and just making sure that, you know, the clubs run more efficiently than, you know, and than worrying about, you know, satisfying the fans necessarily. Because I think, to an extent, we've been complaining about, you know, signings, you know, in the past, potentially just being making the fans happy, you know, just for the sake of that, even though they're not potentially wise. So I think I can speak for us all in terms of, you know, focusing on make sure that the club's in a stable position rather than making every fan happy, because I think we all know that that's effectively impossible. And obviously we can't take full responsibility for the whole sort of thing, with despite the protests and everything. I know Blackpool and Charlton fans were a bit like, oh, come on, guys, you've only done one protest, and yet, you know, you're forcing it out. And, you know, I don't think we can necessarily take all the credit for that. And I'm sure Ken will refuse to admit that either. And, you know, we'll assure everyone that he's doing it off his own back. But
I think we have to sort of hold our hands up and admit that while the protest was, I think, a success, based on the amount of people that turned up and the amount of coverage it got, it's the pressing issue of the fact that, you know, in a couple of days' time, the bailiffs will be around knocking on the door and wanting to buy the stadium and turn it into a shopping centre. You know, it's that.
Of course, yeah.
That's quite concerning from his point of view.
Yeah, so I think it's it's sort of left him with no choice but to get rid at this point, hasn't it? So obviously hope it works out for all parties concerned. You know, by the end of the week and by the next podcast, you know, we'll be able to say happy days. You know, we're sort of in the clear. But you know, let's not be overly complacent and just hope that all goes well this week.
Yeah, of course not. But there's actually, from what I've been reading, there's a lot more hope to be had with Parminder Bajrun and all his team, because I'll be reading from Dan Ron that apparently Bajrun, he knew Phil Gartside, and he had a friendship with his, and he still has a friendship with his son Andy, who, and Andy's own business is sports agency that Bajrun's invested in, so he clearly has some links to Bolton. So you sort of like to get the feel that it's not just just buying a club that's on its knees at its weakest that you can potentially invest in and try and make a profit out of, like Ken did last time. Because,
and I know these are business people, aren't they? But you know, I think it's quite exciting to sort of get the gist of the fact that they're actually interested in the sport. You know, and you know, it's all focused on that. You know, not just upon making money. And you know, of course, owning a football club is, you know, is a money-making scheme to an extent, but to have an actual passion and want to see the club succeed, you know, in sort of every which way, you know, is really encouraging.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that he has a good reputation preceding that, and he doesn't have the muddy history that Ken has, it all seems to just be pointing in a positive direction. But if I have to play devil's advocate here, are there any worries that Parminder Bajrun, obviously he still has some net worth, but are we worried about him potentially maybe withholding a lot of that net worth, or any of his partners withholding a lot of that net worth if it still goes tips up? Or
I mean, I'm sure we can't expect him to just load every penny that he has into the club, you know, on the basis that, you know, he's likely to lose a lot of it instantly and just repaying, you know, the things that, you know, we haven't been able to already. You know, I think it'd be wise enough to know what the right amount is to, you know, to sort of give us and invest in us and push us in the right direction, really. So it's all very encouraging. And one more point that I was going to make on the whole thing is that, you know, the rumours have come out that potentially David Weir might be interested in the management role. What would you boys make of that? Do we think that that'd be you know, obviously it's their choice to decide if it'd be wise, but, you know, would you...
Well, would it be a management role, or would it be a coaching role? Because he's been a coach pretty much nearly enough everywhere else he's been.
Of course, yeah, and I know he's been involved with Warburton, and I'm not sure what the deal is there in terms of them being sort of involved in a crossover deal, or whether it's the same party or whatnot. You know, obviously we've sort of been kept very much in the dark about, you know, who's involved in what.
If you believe what you read in The Sun, Mark
Watson's
supposed to be taking over and being in charge of the football side of things as a director of football, and with David Weir as the manager.
Yeah.
But Mark House has been playing that down all day on Twitter and other social medias. And if you believe what Mark House has been saying, he's been saying that they've talked to Mark Warburton and he's offered some advice, but it sounds like he's not going to be taking huge role in the club.
Yeah, something to consider is, you know, not wanting to sort of worry Park, you know, and make him concerned about his position. You know, you can't expect him to just be fine about the whole thing, you know, and you can't discourage him from, you know, potentially affecting things towards the close of the season and how he'll go about that, or whether or not he'll even be there to see that out. I just wonder whether or not they're being a bit coy about that for that exact reason.
I was just going to say, you can't expect Parker to have been told before a deal's been done anyway, you know, whether or not he's going to be sacked or whether his job's safe. I think we owe him, you know, the time to at least have talks with the new owners to see where he stands and where they stand. And if they feel like a change is, you know, needed to try and keep us in the league, you know, so be it.
I think there's an argument to be had. I mean, obviously a lot of listeners and possibly yourselves are going to disagree with me on this, but I think there's an argument to be had that if, for example, we do get relegated, for give Parkinson the opportunity to get us back up with a little bit of investment into the playing squad, based on his experience at that level and the fact that a League One club is not necessarily a great proposition to a manager, to a new manager, if you then sack the old one who you went down with.
Another thing to consider as well is, you know, providing that, you know, the new owners are going to, you know, allow the manager to spend money, whoever that manager is. We've had this discussion before, but whether or not, you know, you trust Parkinson with those funds, had they been available to him, you know, now or, you know, come the end of the season or come what may.
He's got a decent eye for a player, more of a decent eye than people tend to give him credit for. And a lot of the poor signings that we've had have been sort of down to the fact that he's not been able to bring in anybody else. But, you know, I don't necessarily think that a lot of the signings he's made have been bad signings, basically. Just you have to sort of factor in that he's working from a very, very small pool. And I think we've squeezed every last drop out of that pool. And that's why you're suddenly seeing now us really, really struggle.
But yeah, it's good to see, you know, even though relegation is pretty much on the cards, you know, regardless of whether or not they will entrust Parkinson with that role, and, you know, come summertime. And if we are, you know, a League One club, what happens with that, you know, and what approach they take in terms of, you know, being so financially involved, you know, whether or not, you know, the money would be limited whilst we're in a lower league position or what, you know, I couldn't tell you that personally. It'd just be interesting to see, you know, how we stand, you know, being taken over by wealthy individuals at such what is effectively a low level. Just wonder how that'll affect us in the future, you know, whether or not we'll be able to bounce back straight up again, or, you know, whether or not we might struggle. But
yeah, personally, there is a lot of legitimacy to the argument of if we're going to get relegated anywhere, there is a lot of legitimacy to keeping Parkinson as the manager, because obviously he knows the league, he knows the league very well, and he will buy all the players necessary to get us promoted in that league again. I fully believe that he would get us promoted again if we went down to League One, but I think there's also the argument to be had that if the new owner's coming in and he wants to bring a lot of stability and wants to bring completely fresh ideas, reevaluate the community within the club, that he would have to completely build back from scratch again. Because whether we like it or not, whether he does deserve a chance or not is, in my opinion, sort of irrelevant, because a lot of people have fallen out of love with Parky. Yes, we have the good memories from the past two seasons, but regardless of whether he has had that incredibly small pool to pull from, that small pool of players, he's not getting a lot out of the current players he's got now. He's alienated a couple of them. He doesn't play some of them who probably deserve to play. He keeps sticking with players who are woefully out of form or just do not deserve to be in the squad at all.
I mean, we had this discussion last week about, you know, whether or not regardless of form, regardless of current positioning or whatever, all the necessary to make changes. You know, I think, you know, some people strongly believe that, you know, regardless of that, you know, Parky will make room for it for his favourites. You know whether or not that's accurate or not, I couldn't possibly say. You know, we've seen the likes of Mark Little and Aaron Ostuma, you know, being left out continuously. Whether or not there's been, you know, unrest there amongst the players and the management or whatever, or whether or not they're just simply out of favour. You know, again, we couldn't tell you that for sure. It's just interesting to see, you know, how he goes about his team selections and, you know, whether or not that would be likely to change before the end of the season. Do either of you guys have any more thoughts on that, or do you think we've covered all bases with that, really?
I think James makes a very good point in the fact that, you know, Phil Parkinson has managed to ruin... Well, I wouldn't have said ruin. I think that's a bit harsh. I think the fact that it's gone stale to the point that all the good memories that we have of him for a lot of fans, I'd probably say, I'd go as high as 80% of the fan base, is now very keen to see the manager replaced. Mm. And I think it would be a very smart move for the owners to do it, to get rid of him, but obviously not in a manner that's going to, you know, besmirch what he's done for this club, because as I maintain, he's been our most successful manager since Allardyce.
Of course.
But it would be a very, very smart move for them to get rid, I think, just to get fans on side, get the majority, because the majority is always the one that you want. And I think that would start bringing supporters back. I think a lot of supporters actually don't come to the games, mainly because, you know, of Parkinson's football. You know, history in football is important to a degree, but it is history. And the here and now, and the reality of the here and now, is the fact that Parkinson is not getting the best out of his players and has alienated not just them, but also the fans.
In that case, then, if you were able to have the pick of the crop or the pick of the bunch or whatever on no particular, you know, grounds, who would you like to see come in as a replacement, if the, you know, money no objects, or...
A realistic choice is a difficult one. I think David Lead, not yet. I think if we were sacking Parkinson now and unable to get someone in, I'd give him the job to the end of the season just to see what he could do with the final 12 games.
Mm.
But from a permanent point of view, I'd probably look further down the leagues, to be honest. Yeah. I'd see who's doing a good job there. Bolton's a very, very attractive proposition for a lot of clubs who are struggling.
Yeah.
And you know, you saw Nathan Jones move to Stoke, for example. But no, to think of a name on top of the head is actually quite a struggle, which is difficult, which is obviously a problem that the owners are wrestling with at this point.
James, who would be your pick?
Yeah, probably the same. It'd probably have to be a manager that would maybe play a different style of football, get more out of the players, more of their players who do have that attacking ability, but just don't really know how to hone it. Like maybe players like Joe Williams, like Aaron Ostuma, like Yannick Wiltshire, etc., etc. If I suppose, bear in mind that I'm not fully aware of everyone who's available or everyone in management right now, but maybe a Carlos Carvajal or something like that. Or
yeah, I mean, I like to think that someone like Neil Warnock might be interested in, although it'd be, you know, a step down from him, I just think it'd be quite well suited to the club.
Would, but he would also play the same style of football, and that's what a lot of fans are getting Parky on. But if he, I suppose the argument is to be had, if you get results, it doesn't matter how you play. But still,
The Cowley brothers, anyone?
Who? Oh, the Lincoln boys.
Possibly, yeah. It's a good shout, because they've done him exceptionally well just recently, haven't they? You know, finding their way up the leagues and what have you. And, you know, seem to just keep climbing. I mean, there's options all over the place, isn't there? And I think Lee made a very good point last week about, you know, how the Dortmund assistant managers have managed to come to England and, you know, just pull it off absolutely no problem. And whether or not, you know, the next one who's in line there is worth just drafting in for our next manager, just see if that would work. But obviously,
he could just pull a name completely out of nowhere. I mean, none of us had heard of Daniel Farke before he came in, and he's completely transformed Norwich into a brilliant attacking outfit. So, who knows?
I agree. I think we'd be foolish to not look for a foreign manager. It's just, you know, this is Bolton Wanderers, who've to my knowledge, never had one, have they? So, we were very traditional in that respect.
That's very true. Eddie, who would be your choice? If anyone...
I was actually going to suggest the Cowley brothers before Tom stole my idea, so I'm kind of stumped at the minute.
I'm on the podcast all the time, Eddie. I'm full of it.
I mean, it depends what kind of avenue they want to go down. Do they want to go for someone who's got experience, you know, who's one of these run-of-the-mill, takes a job every 6 months managers in the Football League? Or if they want someone with fresh ideas, or if they want to go down the Man United route, like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and maybe look at a former player who's going to be that crowd pleaser who'd be a kind of manager who doesn't necessarily have the credentials, but, you know, would certainly get fans on seats, you know, like Kevin Nolan. Yeah, which is the name I was going to suggest.
Don't you mean Super Kevin Davis?
Oh, yeah. Oh, what a moment that was. But, yeah, somebody like that who has the club's interest at the best interest at heart, and he maybe didn't get the biggest chance at Leighton Orient, you know, because of dodgy owners, and or at Notts County rather, you know, he'd done a really good job there last season before he got the boot.
But Notts County are regretting that decision now, aren't they?
Most likely, yeah, and the position they're in, because Harry Kuehl didn't work out, did he?
No, he didn't either.
But yeah, it just
Neil Ardley they've got in now.
I think so. Yeah,
he's great. I think he'd be a good shout.
He's done a really good job at Wimbledon.
Thing,
yeah.
This is the thing. If you sort of look down, there's a list of very very stable managers who've had, you know, jobs for a very long time, and therefore, you know, could do jobs. I mean, the job that Jim Bentley does at Morecambe, for example, shouldn't go amiss. I mean, the man is keeping that side, you know, treading water when they've got absolutely no money and very very limited options in terms of playing stuff. You know, I know. There's a lot of people in the media who are very, very big fans of his work.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you can obviously look down lower down the leagues. You can also just look at managers where it doesn't work. Like, I'm sorry, but I'm still not convinced Phil Parkinson can manage in the Championship. I don't think Nathan Jones is going to work out at Stoke City. I don't know. It's really hard to say where we could look for managers, to be honest. We should probably speculate, or who knows, they could actually probably give Phil Parkinson his chance and give him some actual funds.
I'd sooner watch someone build a legacy. I'd try and see someone come in and, you know, try and, rather than a stopgap manager. I don't want to be, you know, like a Leicester City, for example, who, you know, bring in a manager every year and a half or something, have a dead cap bounce, realise it's not working when they don't win for six games and then sack him. You know, that's not what I think our football club should be. It's not what it's been in the past. I don't think it should turn that direction.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, if they want the idea of stability, then they're going to have to think long and hard about that choice. It was sort of the same for how long it took Kenan in the first place to appoint Phil Parkinson. He was patient. Jimmy Phillips was running the team for 3 months, and then eventually he got his man.
That's probably the best thing that Ken's done at this club, I would have said.
I mean, who were the other two managers that they were looking at, you know, when we all thought, oh, well, it's either one or the other, you know, before Parkinson
announced?
It
was Adkins and Cottrell.
I mean, would you take either of them now, or do you think, in hindsight, that...
No,
no, definitely not Steve Cottrell.
I've just had a look at Dortmund's reserve team, seeing as they keep producing these amazing managers, you know, like... What was he called at Huddersfield?
David Wagner.
David Wagner, and I think Farker came from Dortmund as well, for Norwich.
Seawert's just come to...
Another one to Huddersfield, yeah. Alan Terzic is his name, who took over in January. I don't know how he's doing in the league, but he's obviously going to have an amazing career in England
in.
If he comes over.
Sign him up.
Yeah, there you go. We've picked a name out of the hat for you. Mr.
Barron.
There you go, job done. No more interviews needed. But other than that, I think we've covered that pretty well, and obviously we'll just have to see how that pans out over the course of the week, and hopefully we'll be able to bring you some more news on that next week. Hopefully a bit more of a celebratory podcast. But until then, we'll go through some of your Twitter questions, because for whatever reason we just completely forgot last week. So we'll cover last week's first, given that they're still relevant, and then we will move on to the ones that you've kindly given us in the last hour or so. So where we will start is with Tom, yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to James and Tom?
You can tell us yourself. What happens? We're back.
You are back.
We were dead for about 3 weeks, and now we're alive.
Exactly. Good. Yeah.
I'm sure.
Hold on a secret mission about which we cannot give any information.
Very good. I'll ask no more. I'm just looking at a few here. A couple of them aren't really relevant anymore, given yesterday's news, today's news rather. One that is still is Paul Skelly. Any relation, Eddie?
Yeah, it's my uncle. He lives in Sydney, so he's a regular listener. So, brilliant. Hello, Uncle Paul.
Shout out to Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Uncle Paul.
Hi, Uncle Paul.
Hey, Uncle Paul.
Paul says, should we be happy with relegation as a sensible step to regroup and prepare with new leadership? Our last League One season was great.
Chris, it would be in four, hasn't he? But he loves it. He loved being in League One.
He did.
Yeah. I mean, I love beating a lot of the teams down there, but To be honest, if you really want to try and push back up for stability, we should be trying to push for stability on a championship budget.
I don't think we really have a choice in it anymore, do we?
Neither do I. I mean, we're 4 points adrift now, and with the current crop of players, I don't see it coming back. But if at all possible, if we can somehow remain in the championship yet again, maybe Clayton Donaldson will be on our Wilbraham this season.
Imagine.
Well, we won't need to imagine it. But yeah, something like that. If we, I would probably much prefer to do it on a championship level. But oh well, I wouldn't mind another League One tour. Go down to Wacky for a day.
Eddie, I'm sure you've had endless conversations with him about this, but would you like to give him a personalised response?
Yeah, I don't think happy is the right word to go back down to League One, really. But, you know, it was nice to be a bigger fish in a little pond and seeing all the people getting really wound up like they did with Leeds in the Championship, you know, to be that bigger team and to rattle fans and to take results from, you know, grounds that you don't really get to go to. And it was great, really, because, you know, you got to actually go to an away game and expect a Bolton win, which hasn't happened really in the Championship in the last few years. And, if, you know, whilst it does look like we are probably going down, you know, I'd like to see us still try and put up a fight and stay in the league. But if it's not possible, you know, it wasn't disastrous being in League One, provided that, you know, we can actually build a team capable of getting back up to the Championship, whether that's with Parky or with somebody else.
Yeah, good shout. Joe Ramsden says, if this takeover happens and we actually get a decent injection of cash, what should our first move be?
I think that's obvious, isn't it? We need goals.
Yep.
A little bit. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Striker, I mean, definitely first and foremost.
Joe suggested
Marvin Emnes.
Please, no.
Has anyone else looked at him and thought he looks a bit like Mustafa Riga?
Riga's back.
I'd Google him because he's in Africa somewhere causing some trouble last time.
I was going to say, didn't he get sent down or something?
I mean, he's not the only former wanderer getting in trouble in Africa.
He threatened to beat up a guy named Journalist a couple of years ago.
Brilliant.
What, for telling him he was shit? Because I can tell you right now that he was correct in that assumption.
criticising his management style, apparently.
Oh, Jesus.
So
about Mustafa Riga, right? I think he was supposed to be a replacement for Diouf, and he's turned up at like the home game against West Brom and done like two outside of the foot free kicks that have both been saved by Scott Carson, and then I never saw him again. That was it.
Yep. Never to be.
Wasn't he on number 10 for like 2 years and we never saw him?
Look back at our crossbar challenge videos on Soccer AM and he's there both times. And he looks like he's the most popular person in the team and he never played.
He had the best chant though for a couple of years, didn't he? Every time he came for the warm up, people just shouted, Riga, Riga. And he never came on.
He's sort of a weird cult hero in a sense like that. It's hard to explain.
We miss your Riga.
No, we don't. Ebi Smolarek.
Just any more irrelevant names?
Ariza Makakula.
Razziak.
Oh, Sebastian Puigrenier.
Lubomir Mikulic.
Heide Helgeson.
What is our club?
Just laughing stock.
Zoltan Hassanyi.
Where's Edge Augustin?
Zemish Lord Kazmierzak.
Any more?
No, we'll stop.
Zoltan Arainzi.
Giles Coke.
Oh, God.
Simeon Slavchev, boys.
Philip Twardzik.
What was the name? Do we have the little Portuguese lad?
Rashina.
Rashina.
Yeah. Oh, he was sick. No, he was good, to be fair.
No, he wasn't.
He was.
No, he wasn't.
He was for a bit.
I'm pretty sure. No, I'm not taking the mic. I'm pretty sure that game against Ipswich that Rashina played pretty well. Paddy McCarthy was also in that team alongside Giles Coke.
Paddy McCarthy was actually decent.
I'll tell you, he wasn't decent.
No, for that.
Francesco Pisano.
Did you go to the Blackburn game? I think it was that year or whatever. And Paddy McCarthy was playing centre half. I think it was his debut. And I actually thought he played out of his skin to say he was like actually getting on a bit. I thought it was brilliant, but.
That was the funniest season I think I've ever been involved in. Just the sheer number of players that we had on our books who I never saw play.
Yeah.
Like I felt so bad for Slavchev because he did like that 20-minute long interview and then like played once, I think.
Yeah, but he got injured.
Longer interview than game time.
He said he followed the club since he was a child. He played with him on FIFA and stuff like that.
Oh my days.
The things they'll say. I mean, at least it's just a change from originality. Like, yeah, great to be here. Delighted. Buzzing. Can't wait to get started. I played with Bolton as a kid on FIFA.
This podcast has descended into chaos. Like, we're just shouting random names. This is genuinely intriguing. Like, I'd love to sort of do a thread of like all kinds of clubs, random players. They just, you know, I can't believe this person represented my
Vladimir
club.
Weiss.
I liked him.
Greg Wilde.
He was not good.
Rio Miachi.
He was good. I liked him as well.
All right. Let's get off this topic.
I was going to say, we're just shouting random names out. It's just like, well, I'll just ask a question in a minute and one of you will just say a random name.
I'm Googling now. Yeah, football managers say that.
So we'll move on from last week's questions because I think the rest of them, they sort of answered themselves by now.
Put a field.
There you go. Shut up, James.
Steve Derrida.
Oh, he was brilliant.
Shut up.
Alan Hutton.
All right, go on.
Neil Hunt. I think, Eddie, you've already answered this actually on Twitter. If Ken is selling his share of the club, then who owns the remaining 5%? That's a good question. Is it just the fans' shares through the supporters' trust or whatever? Or is it just... I don't know how it works.
Yeah, I think they were split down a long time ago and then fans could be able to buy a share in the club.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much worthless. There's that many people who've got one. I think my granddad owns a share and Big Sam has a share. Yeah.
Get your finger out. Where's the transfer signings? What are you playing?
I'll have to ring my granddad up tomorrow, you know, and have a go with him. A lot of people have these shares, and I know Big Sam's share was bigged up last year. Like, people thought, oh, he's going to take over the club now. But yeah, they're pretty much worthless, and it's just,
I think,
you know, 5%.
Even though everybody would love that, I think Big Sam would have to be absolutely daft to actually think about even remotely doing that. Like, because
he could 100% afford it.
I mean, that's another.
We could 100% afford him on the off, but could we afford all of his targets?
Exactly. Yeah.
Or the wine or the unlimited Bovril we'll probably want as well.
In pints.
I could get behind that. I could very much get behind that.
I'd fund it myself. Student loans for days.
Sorry, just the button, Will, because I know you know what I'm about to do, but I've just come up with an absolute gem of a random player who plays football.
Oh, God.
This is over. This is done once I've done this. Jan Gregers, who has now gone on to have 21 caps for Slovakia after playing no times for us on loan.
I remember him. Didn't he score like a screamer for the under-23s and was never seen again?
Absolute worldie, Eddie.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
If you've not seen it, check it out. I think it's on YouTube against Manchester City's under-23s and then he was never seen again.
Gail Kakuta.
He's at Minnesota United now. I didn't even think that was a team.
All right, who remembers Yannick Bastos?
I remember Yannick Bastos.
I remember Yannick
He was another
Bastos.
One who said that
he wasn't he supposed to be like the biggest Luxembourgish footballer or something? And then he just. I don't think he's ever appeared for their national team ever again.
I'll tell you one thing, he's actually doing all right, Chris Basham. Like, isn't he skipper of Sheffield United?
Yeah.
Or, like, when Sharp's not playing? Like, he's actually gone on and done all right for himself, I thought. But Michael
Everyone complains about our academy.
Michael O'Halloran.
He's all right in Scotland. Toppy of the day, he's still knocking about.
Benicophobe.
Hey.
All right.
Liam McNeil says, reckon two up top is the way forward for the rest of the season. I mean,
we've only got two.
I used to think, yes, we have to play 4-4-2. I was absolutely set on it. And now it's like, I don't think it would make any difference. Like, literally, if Beavers are waiting to play up front, I think we'd score more goals.
I think that's a given.
Yeah,
I still think we should play 4-3-3, but I especially even more now considering that we only have two bloody strikers. I suppose three if you count Conor Hall, but he's never going to play for us.
The problem is I would play 4-3-3 if our wingers weren't so absolutely terrible and also played on the wrong side and have no interest in crossing whatsoever. It's one of those things. I can't understand why, you know, why Parkinson throws Will Buckley on for about 5 minutes and then expects him to suddenly make a huge change to the game when you give him 90 minutes one week and he can't do it in that time. So I don't understand the logic.
To be honest, Will Buckley should be a right winger. I heard he did quite well at that.
No.
Will Buckley should be at another club.
Will Buckley should not be a professional footballer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we have him, though.
Yeah. Okay.
The problem is, he's still going to come away from this season with a little bit of credit because he scored a few goals that have flown in off his chest without him knowing anything about it.
And then taking all the credit for who cupped his ear to the fans.
It's like Cole Stockton at Tranmere, who scored like 1 in 21 and then, you know, shushed the fans when he scored that one goal.
We've had another one and it's like an anonymous account. So when will we find our new Kevin Davis, someone who truly gives their all and leaves every match, leaving their blood, sweat and tears on the pitch, someone who could be a true leader?
We sold him. He's at Gillingham. He's called Tom Eaves.
Are you all right?
I thought you were going to say about Gary Medine.
No, you're kidding me. Not Gary Medine. I reckon Kevin Davis would say boo to Gary Medine and he'd have a heart attack.
I think Jay Spearin was about as close as we got, wasn't it, really, in terms of like recently. I love Jay Spearin. I'd have him back. Anyway, Andrew Gallagher has asked, who is commissioning the statue of Ken?
Ken.
Yeah.
Lee.
The fun Kathy from the match worn shorts.
It's a 70th birthday present from Lee to Ken.
And yeah, Matty Dearden, the final one, has a very good suggestion. Get Parminder Bajran on the show.
Mr.
Bajran, if you're listening, DM us. Slide in.
Yeah. We'll try and get Ian on. We'll try and get Ian on so we can actually make some sense of the financials.
But until then, if we've covered everything else, unless any of you have anything else to add.
No, I've sort of exhausted my list of.
It's been a great show, boys, until it sort of went to the dogs. But you know, it's been enjoyable nonetheless. So thank you.
We've taken a few people down memory lane. Well, a lot of people appreciate it.
I'm sure they will. But yeah, thank you to everyone for joining us. Tom, do you want to plug yourself? Where can we find you?
I don't really want to give my address out on a podcast, Will. I don't have Twitter to all intents and purposes.
I wonder why. James, regrettably, where can we find you?
you can find me at Real James Jarvis.
Brilliant. And Eddie, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Eddie Skilly.
Brilliant. And you can find me at WI1LJ. And obviously, all our ramblings are on the Line of Beyond a Suite website. Make sure to check out the podcast on iTunes. Leave it a rate. And yeah, let us know what you think. Give us more suggestions for next week. We'd love to hear from you. But yeah, until then, it's time to say goodbye. So say goodbye, Tom.
Goodbye, Tom.
Goodbye, James.
Goodbye, James.
Goodbye, Eddie.
Goodbye, Eddie.
And it's a goodbye from me, c'est la vie.